everybody here still? Did anyone pass?
No, we're all still here. Only Joffrey has passed.
The breaker of chains
of your boring Monday morning. It's Game of Thrones. How are you guys?
An alternate title of this episode would be The Strangler. I thought that that would be also cool because we've seen The Strangler before, but as it turns out, that was what got Joffrey.
In the end, it wasn't the pie. Or the pigeon beak.
I think now we should probably take a moment to collect our thoughts after what we've just seen. It's just aired. And also to say hello to everyone listening. Thank you for listening.
Hello.
Thank you for choosing us to listen to. That's
very nice.
I have
a question, Zach.
What's your question, Micah?
I think, and I could be wrong because it is late.
It is late.
Where I'm recording right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I swear I heard a female voice.
Are you sure?
I'm sure. And I know it wasn't Eric's.
Were you pretending to be a girl again?
Over the hills, with the foothills, you heard an echo of a fair maiden.
Why don't we just introduce a new friend of ours? Her name is Kate. She's here to join us this evening for our episode discussion and much, much more that will follow. I mean, we all just saw this happen. And now she can speak again and prove that there is a female voice here.
I don't know what you're talking about. I think it was Eric.
Yeah, it was totally me.
Hello, everybody. I'm Kate.
Hi, Kate.
Hi. It's so nice to be here. I've also just watched the episode. It was a doozy.
It was a doozy.
So here's me. I'm friends with Zach. I know him through Christian Nairn. And I used to do a podcast called Beyond the Wall many years ago. And we did lots of cool Game of Thrones stuff. And it was a blast. And so now I'm here with my good friends, Zach, Micah, and Eric, to talk about Game of Thrones again.
Kate, when you last podcasted about Game of Thrones, Sansa had more or less just gotten to King's Landing.
Yes.
Now we see that she has apparently escaped, finally.
Wow.
Away.
Full,
that is
full
different.
Circle.
What's it like talking about it? I mean, you haven't talked about it yet, but if you were to talk about it, what would that be like? Please share.
Well, I would say when I first was podcasting, Sansa was a bit of a jerk, and she is a lot less of a jerk now. I think that's the major character
arc.
Is it that she's less of a jerk or just more of a victim?
I think she's had her eyes opened a bit. I think that she's a super interesting character, and I actually have a lot of respect for her as a character, certainly on the show. I think that the actress who plays her is incredible and is showing this wonderful coming of age story that's very dark. And Sansa has quite a lot of strength. I read an article not too long ago. This is not an episode recap. I'm sorry, we're getting off track here, but I read this great article you guys might have already discussed on the podcast that was about how Sansa being this frail feminine character, she's actually one of the strongest female characters on the show. Unlike Brienne or Arya, who are fighting this war with swords, she's actually fighting it with what she's been told her entire life is she has to do. She's this feminine grace and charm and trying to have manners, but it's a very difficult position to put her in. She's a really interesting character.
And now we've made it this far. It just feels so weird. I remember the fervor and the falling action from last week. I mean, guys, we talked about King Joffrey dying on Monday and again on Friday. Can you believe that? Like, it's past. It's already happened.
For me, it happened a long time ago, but
right.
I do get what you're saying.
Well, I mean, when we started the show, this was always something that the Sullys knew was coming. And, you know, just like it happened to us last year with the Red Wedding. We're facing it now, and it's just like, you know, we're making our first show back, the next episode back after it's all happened, and it begins, and I think in such a shatteringly, earth-strikingly way, not like Game of Thrones has done before, but showing footage from a previous episode just to reiterate the moment, and the music is just building up and starting from there. I kind of felt like an action movie with the wide shots of King's Landing and then cutting finally to Sansa and her escape.
You know, I found it kind of crazy, like Cersei immediately goes, "Where's Sansa? Get Sansa."
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. No, it's almost immediate. So I was Cersei has some really great observation skills in such a sad moment for her. She's able to notice that Sansa is missing.
Nobody leave the capital.
That was a really good payoff for just something I speculated last Friday. I was like, yeah, they're not the Lannisters are going to lock down the entire city. They have to basically tighten up their strength and security and make sure that all the people who would do them harm are under closer watch than ever. But Sansa slipped through with the help of the late, recently late, Ser Dantos. Late in many ways. Late,
poor Ser Dantos.
Late because he took a book off or a season or two off at the very least. late as in deceased. And I got to tell you guys, I'm a little upset that his honor that I held much in store by his honor seems to be bought by Baelish.
Can we agree, though, that 10,000 golden dragons is a pretty good price for all that he did?
But yeah. He's a good guy. He was supposed to sneak her out because he wanted to see her free.
That is fuck you money, though, Eric. Imagine a fool. He's just breaking out of King's Landing with 10 G's in his pocket.
Definitely. Yeah.
And they're golden G's. GG's.
But when it turns out that he did it for money, this is like, this is why I'm kind of wondering how the Dantos thing will play out in the books. Because they've sort of combined, or they've gotten, we thought Sansa was going to escape with Baelish last season.
I don't think Peter Baelish has ever been creepier than he was in this episode. Yeah. Holy crap.
I thought he was going to make out really with her deep. At some point.
He's always been creepy to her, but this was especially like, I promise you'll be safe now. Like,
there's no reason. Let me see that necklace. You see, everything is fake in the capital, but not me.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, she broke out of her situation. The last thing she saw in civilized company was Joffrey being poisoned to death. Now she's running with her Florian through the alleyways and into the canoe and into the ship. It's just, not to mention how Baelish is being, but Sansa's state of mind right now, I can only imagine, is just wild. Like, I can't wait till we reach this point in the books.
How about this reveal, though? I mean, Baelish is behind Sansa escaping King's Landing. And not only that, one of the questions I wrote down immediately when he's talking with Sansa as soon as she boards the ship, he mentions that Joffrey's dead. Well, how the hell does he know that?
He's on a ship covered with fog. He couldn't have seen it happen.
Someone sent him a quick raven.
Word travels very fast. Quickly.
So the plot thickens.
Well, I think it's... If he had something,
in my opinion, it seems pretty stone cold that Olenna Tyrell did this.
Well,
before I had my theories about the Queen of Thorns, because on Friday, our episode, Eric was like, I pick her, so I picked her too. So that's the person I think who did it.
You said it was well informed.
It was well informed. You did a good job. All right. But what I mean to say is, now that I know that Baelish has not only broken Sansa out, but knew about Joffrey dying ahead of time, because he did say that on the ship. And, I was looking at that and listening. I'm just like, well, clearly Baelish had a part in this. That also explains how easily the fool was able to grab her away from the dais, which makes sense. Right. But, I mean, I just don't – I can't make the connection that the Queen of Thorns had something to do with it, because there's still the fact that Margaery lost her queenship, and I don't know that that's what they were planning.
When I wanted to blame Olenna, and as Zach said on Friday, we said that, she's probably the one behind it. But in this episode with the scene between her and Margaery, I expected more of a confession, really. I expected Margaery to confront Olenna and Olenna to say, well, I did this for you or I did this for us. Instead, you kind of got this conversation where the Queen of Thorns is saying, well, you're better off. Like, you may not have enjoyed watching him die, but you enjoyed that more than you would have been married to him. It's kind of funny, but it's still no smoking gun. She's not kind of going into the reasons. Margaery's not accusing her of murder, and she's not going into the reasons why that was necessary or taking responsibility for it, even in the close quarters.
You guys pointed out on the last episode that there was really only a handful of people who could have been responsible for actually poisoning him. And one of them was Cersei, the other was the Queen of Thorns. And I think that they're going to continue to really play this out over the course of the next couple of episodes for as long as they can. And I thought in this particular episode, they did, in a way, cast a bit of suspicion on two other characters. One was Tywin, because mm-hmm. of a lot of the interaction he had with Tommen. And that was a great scene. Yeah, how content he seemed with the fact that Tommen was now king. He even bashes Joffrey while he's lying dead there.
Very true.
Inside the Sept of Baelor. And the other was Oberyn Martell during Tywin's conversation in the brothel with him. pointing out the fact that he is very well versed in poisons.
He goes, "Do you want to sit?" And he's like, "No."
I know where those sheets
in
have
your
been.
Fluids. That's okay.
Not on the bed. He's like, "You're still sweating."
Kind of what I'm getting at here is that they're going to continue to really play this out for as long as they can, because ultimately, I would think that in one of these episodes before the end of the season, we're going to find out who really was the one to poison him. It's clear that Baelish is a part of this, and it's
definitely
clear that he has probably been the mastermind of this entire plan. And to me, that strengthens him as a player in this game. And you know, we go all the way back to when we started discussing the very first season when we did commentary on it, and even reading the first book, the two people that we pointed at being serious players in this game but probably don't always get the level of recognition are Varys and Baelish. And I think now we're starting to see just how good they are at manipulating everybody else.
What do you think Varys is thinking right now that he's seen all this happen? Because we didn't get to have that follow-up with him. Like, we had those excellent dramatic sort of dolly shots of him at the wedding where he was really, really thinking about what was happening. But beyond that, I mean, I just want to know if he thinks this is Baelish and what he thinks about Baelish now, if he thinks it's Baelish.
Didn't we find out that he's going to testify against Tyrion? Mm-hmm. So
yes.
Somehow, I mean, he's kind of in self-preservation mode, kind of like he was the last time we saw him, when he confronted Tyrion about, you know, sort of not about coming forward with Shay. If he is, he's just really trying to protect his own interests. I think that he's going to send people to find Baelish, or at least really try and point the blame in that direction.
I don't know if he'll point blame at Baelish. I just think that, you know, Varys will reveal his allegiances as time goes on, but right now he's doing what's in his own best interest, and that is not going against Tywin and Cersei. He says as much when he's talking to Tyrion in the last episode.
Yeah.
When they're talking about Shay getting out of King's Landing. So
on one hand, he's going to have to stand in front of Tyrion and say, "Hey, it's very likely that you killed the king."
Well,
but then he's
Varys
not going to be
always
able
very
to say,
careful with what he says. He's very
calculating. He's always very careful, but he's going to have to like hide the fact that they conspired to get Tyrion's mistress out of the city that same day.
Yes,
so
but
it's just weird to see Varys on an opposing side to Tyrion as all.
To answer your question, though, I would think that Varys would see Joffrey's death, as he says in, you know, earlier seasons, for the good of the realm. You know, he always serves the good of the realm in his mind, and I think that Joffrey being dead serves the good of the realm.
Oh my god, what if Varys was working with Littlefinger?
That would be crazy.
Yeah.
Although Tyrion, you know, getting back to this too with Varys and Tyrion, Varys has said that Tyrion is one of the few men in this kingdom who can make a difference and who can change everything and make it a great place. This doesn't work. Like, Varys's optimism towards Tyrion doesn't work if Tyrion's in chains. So why would Varys contribute to Tyrion's arrest or imprisonment or, you know, trial at all in a negative way? He doesn't want to see Tyrion in chains any more than we do.
He needs to save face right now, though. He needs to...
Well, he's going to save his own face at the risk of at the cost of Tyrion's head. It doesn't make any sense.
I think Varys' survival is his primary strategy. Mm-hmm. And so if that means taking Tyrion down, I can see him turning tail and testifying against him. I definitely see that in Varys' character.
But Varys always has another plan
exactly.
up his sleeve.
Exactly, yeah.
He's got a lot of stuff up his sleeves.
I think, I feel like getting back to the idea of it being Tywin or Oberyn, I think I disagree on both counts, because I really don't think that Tywin would have, if he was going to be the one to assassinate Joffrey, I don't think he would do it so there. Late in the game. I don't think he would do it. I think that, first of all, like, he's not going to kill his own kin. I think that the Lannister bloodline is extremely important to him, because there's so much atrocity that he's witnessed and has still defended his crazy children and grandchildren. And so if he was going to kill Joffrey, it seems like it wouldn't have been in such a theatrical way. That doesn't seem like a Tywin Lannister thing to do to me. Mm. And he kind of... he encouraged Joffrey in a lot of ways, by either omission or direct encouragement in the past. And so I don't know, it doesn't sit right for me. And as far as Oberyn goes, I feel like he's got the most evidence against him, and he has so many reasons and so many ways that he could be prepared to have done something like that, and, you know, well connected and kind of exotic and crazy sounding all the time. But I feel like he defends himself quite well against Tywin's interrogation at the end. I totally, by the end of that discourse, I had discounted Oberyn as a suspect entirely.
Definitely good points, and I don't think that Tywin would have asked Oberyn to be, you know, a judge or to sit on the small council
cool
if
that?
He really believed.
It was so cool.
That's really
he was responsible.
Yeah.
The world that Tywin Lannister lives in is the world where there were kings who were just but got stabbed in the back by their brother, or were foolish and starved. You know, in his lesson to Tommen is pretty much the same, that kings die, and the less careful kings die quicker. And so his lecture, which I think was definitely a highlight of this episode.
Yeah,
absolutely.
For Cersei, if for no other reason, is for her reactions when he completely discredits Joffrey right in front of her by just like being like he was a weak king.
Right.
He was a
failure.
Yeah,
he says to Tommen in front of Cersei, "Your brother was not a wise king. Your brother was not a good king. If he had been, perhaps he would still be alive."
Yes, right.
They
over
all
his
lack
body.
Wisdom.
Amazing. Yeah, and it was solid advice that Tywin was giving out too. And I'll be honest, it surprised me, because he's done so many openly shady things, and yet he gave extremely good advice to Tommen. And it's mentioned later that he would find Tommen to be a more pliable king. And so he's much more likely to try to steer him into a more politically minded arena.
Yeah, well, it was, it made sense when he said it, but he basically said, listen to your small council, like wisdom. He steered him towards that answer, that a good king is wise.
Yes.
And then he said, you get your wisdom from listening to your council. And he's
right.
The hand of the king.
Yeah.
So it's basically like, let me tell you how to run the kingdom. That's wisdom.
But it's really good advice still. Like,
it's still great advice.
It's super good advice. Tywin's evil and crazy, and that part's not so great. But the whole lesson, listen to your small council, listen to people who know more than you do. I was like, yeah, actually that will make him a really good king.
Yeah, Joffrey was
good on you, Tywin.
And Joffrey was ignorant and indignant and ungrateful and all that. He was impossible to control for the small council. And so he needed to go. Or once he went, they're just not sorry to see him go, is all.
And then, because what else would happen right after that?
Right.
He's giving Tommen
the
sex talk.
By the way, let's have the talk.
Yeah.
That was funny.
I mean, who better a person than your wealthy grandfather? Mm-hmm. You know?
And then
we had
another kind of sex talk.
Well, Jaime enters the Sept of Baelor, kicks all the guards out. It's a moment where no one is there and the doors are shut, just them and their child.
Yeah, and the first thing out of her mouth is, kill Tyrion.
Yes. Oh, that happened. Right.
Mm-hmm. Let's not forget about that. I mean, mm-hmm. she really... I wonder if she really deep down inside believes that Tyrion is responsible for this. I mean, she quotes what he said in a previous season.
Your joy will turn to ash.
Yes. Right. And I think that was actually the scene where they're shipping Myrcella off to Dorne. And, you know, Cersei is talking about, you know, really harming the ones that he loves. And he retorts with that line. But it's... I don't know that deep down she really believes him responsible for this. I think she just sees this as an opportunity to get rid of somebody, even though it's her brother, who she just has absolute disdain for. And who knows what Joffrey was pointing at. You know, everyone assumes it's Tyrion, but, you know, he could have just been motioning with his hand. Nobody really knows what was going on in his mind.
Pointing towards the unicorn that he saw.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, from death. Yeah.
Pointing
well,
at somebody else.
Ned Stark, no!
Yeah.
Ned standing there. Going, yeah.
I think that we're led to believe that we have only a few options, which is either her hysterics has led her to the point where she just says, kill Tyrion. Like, she's so hysterical and so sad over the loss of Joffrey that what he said about ashes in her mouth, it just, to her, absolutely, I'm so upset right now. He did it. He's the one. Or she's being vindictive and doesn't believe that he did it, but like Micah said, just wants to get him out of the way because, hey, this is a pretty clutch opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
Or she did it, and this is blatantly someone that's, you know, going to take the blame instead of her, which, you know, those are options.
Well, two things. Tyrion really discounts the Cersei option, which is, like, crazy. It's, like, because he said
right.
that thing,
I do
he's
too.
Like, she loves her family. I'm yeah. like, wow, he doesn't think it's possible at all, so... Now I don't. But at the same time with Tyrion, like, if she thinks that Jaime is going to go kill Tyrion, she's got yeah. another thing coming.
She's just, she is crazy with grief.
Yeah.
She's
yeah.
got to be. She's out of her mind. She's blaming the first person so that she can get vengeance for her insane son. And it's, I think that's a completely natural yeah. maternal reaction. I too completely discount the Jaime or the Cersei option. I do not think that she would have killed Joffrey.
I just think that her sadness in the role and what she was directed to do, the level of grief that she's showing, I think that it's pretty clear that she didn't do it.
Yeah. yeah.
She is a hateful woman.
She is a hateful woman.
As Jaime points out.
before they... and 10 other pickup lines in Westeros.
What does everybody think about that scene? Because it was pretty intense. It was... Yeah. borderline
a lot of people are angry
non-consensual
yeah.
some
yeah.
people want the heads of the showrunners I've
not
seen it.
Very consistent with the books, not to say that it didn't happen, but it was a bit more consensual than what was shown.
I mean, Lena Headey's saying it's not right, stop, it's not right. Mm-hmm. They're rocking the grave.
It definitely is mixed signals. She's encouraging him. I watched this scene very, very carefully. Not because, you know, it's a sex scene, but because it was, and, you know, I'm into people having sex in crypts. It's a thing of mine. That's not true. I was curious how HBO was going to show this because it's a titillating scene. It's edgy and it's the kind of thing that HBO likes to kind of, throw in your face a little bit, I guess. And so I was watching this and she goes back and forth between yes and no several times during that exchange. I still think that there was absolutely no implied consent. And, but I don't think even she knows what she wants at that point. I think that she wants the comfort of the man that she loves in this time of strife in her heart, in her mind. She's incredibly confused. She's grieving, and Jaime takes absolute advantage of that and does something abhorrent. I honestly believe he did something completely disgusting.
That's his son too. Like right
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Where's shared grief? Where is that?
I know. Yeah. That's not really how I bet it. Also, the Lannister family is so messed up. Maybe that is how the two of them have always grieved. Like I feel yeah. like they mention something about how the two of them reacted when their mother died in childbirth to Tyrion. And maybe it was something similar. Maybe this is something that he didn't even seem like he wanted to. He was just like, oh, I hate that. I love you so much. Let me get that skirt off of you. and it's such a weird reaction. Like, why are you doing this? Is this just what you do? Who knows? It's very strange.
I approach it as I don't really understand and know the full scope of their relationship because we meet them in season one so far into it. They already have children. I mean, it's been several
yes.
years. They're grown up people. So I don't know the level of relationship that they've had together. I don't know when it started. I don't know how long it's been going on. And I don't know what kinds of things that they've shared in the middle of that. So it's hard for me to judge what's happening specifically, but just as a whole, looking at the situation, it was not consented. It was in
no.
front of his son's body, which I think that
yeah.
is the most important point of this whole thing.
Yeah,
Jaime saw the opportunity in a completely solitary place and went crazy. And I think at the end of the day, they both went crazy. And I don't know what's going to happen after this. I don't know how they're going to treat each other after this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I think there's just been so much death that has been the result of this particular relationship. You know, even near-death experiences, right? You go back to Bran finding the two of them, Jon Arryn, Ned Stark, Robert Baratheon, in some ways could be, you know, attributed to their relationship, his death. And now you have them doing it in front of their son's dead body. And it's just, it does show how fucked up they are.
They're a power yeah. couple.
There you go. I used my quota for the show of swear words. We were debating this before the show.
She's like, how often can I cuss?
Yeah.
I feel like if there's one scene where we can cuss and say, that was fucked up, this is probably the scene.
That's true. That was one a little bit later on. I could say that for too. It involved the wildlings.
Oh gosh.
That was so glad you guys saw this. Can we just talk about how epic it was?
Locked it out. Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah, I picked these chickens all day, boy. Oh, Dad, show me where to pick them.
You know who cooks potatoes great? Your mom. Dad.
His last words were your mother.
Oh, so terrible.
And it was a grit.
It was a grit, yes.
She was she fired the first shot.
Wildlings sure behaving badly. And you know, I wanted to say that because we saw Tormund, we saw the other guy, Stiff, the leader of the Thin.
Steer, I think. Steer. Isn't it Steer?
Steer. Steer because Steer is
How many names are we giving him in this episode? Animal.
As many as we can.
That guy. Okay, everybody at this camp who did this, I said, I can never forgive. This is in my notes. I was like, they can never really be absolved of their sins. You hear about people, you hear about the mountain raping and pillaging. You hear about the hound raping and pillaging. And you almost forgive him because when you see him on screen, he's not doing that. But with Ygritte and the rest of the wildlings cutting throats and all the stuff that they're doing, you just seeing it really does in a way make a difference, I think, towards how we see these characters. And this is something Ygritte has probably done since she was a small girl. She's not so small anymore, but she's doing it and it really is a bad thing. You're not supposed to do this to people.
No. I think you bring up a great point though. I think that viewers needed to see this because you read about it in the books, but viewers needed to see exactly how the wildlings behave. You hear about it a lot throughout the course of the show, but now in the last three episodes, because I guess, the Thens were introduced in the first episode of the season, and you see them roasting the person's arm, right? And now you see them really just pillaging and destroying these people who are living very happily. You know, you talked about potatoes and other things, but
wildflowers and
delicious. Yeah, it just goes to show what the Night's Watch are going to be up against. You know, they may not have organization. I think that's the one thing that is their, that could potentially be their ultimate undoing. But they have no sort of, I'm trying to find the right word, but they just don't care. Like they're free and they just go and they do whatever the hell they want.
There are no rules. They're a free agent.
Yeah, they kill at will and they don't think twice about it.
I'm going to eat your mama. I'm going to eat your papa.
That was messed up.
It just felt like the Shire was getting attacked is what it felt like.
It really did.
Seriously. They were getting raided. Arrow in the back of the head. I mean, there was rape, killing. There's a kid hiding under the cart and he's seeing a grit, and the way we're seeing it through his perspective is there's a villain right there that's a bad person in Game of Thrones. But really, it's a grit that slept with John in a cave.
Yeah. Right. That same girl from the hot springs.
It's a complete contrast, though, from what we've seen of the wildlings up until this point. Like, we haven't seen them act this way before.
Now we get to see
how they are when they actually go to battle. Everything we've seen up to this point, like you said, has been Ygritte and Jon Snow, and Tormund's a funny guy, and Mance didn't seem that bad.
Well, there was, of course, Asha, or Osha, sorry, you know, whose group attacked Bran in season one. Of course, she turns out to be this protector for Rickon and this great sort of mother figure for them when they're on the run. But, I mean, that was really, I think that was very early on. These wildlings are crazy people, can't be trusted, all that sort of thing. But even she was then domesticated and turned innocent. Here you're getting kind of balls to the wall. We're crazy.
It is, yeah.
What do you guys think about what happened at Castle Black?
Well, the kid brought the message, obviously, and we got a really quick transition right into a big meeting. And we've got Aemon, again, being the smartest person in the room, as he always is.
Always.
And there is John finally saying, listen, guys, I know that some stuff's happening, and we were talking about who I slept with before, but Mance Rayder is coming. They have 100,000 men, and they're going to burn the biggest fire the North has ever seen.
I was expecting resistance from, is it Thorne? They looked at each other. He kind of shot daggers at John in this episode, but he agreed that they have to fortify their position on the wall if they're ever going to survive or continue to protect the realm. So the option was to go and hunt these wildlings. But they kind of have to all stay where they are.
What John brought up, though, which is a very strategic thing that he thought about, was the mutineers at Craster's Keep. That could be the first line of sort of not really defense or offense, because once the wildlings reach them, they're going to be obliterated. But before they obliterate them, they're probably going to ask more about how many people are at the wall, and that's a bad thing.
It's a very bad
thing. Are we on this podcast? Are we pro Samwell Tarly? Because he was adorable in this episode. Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely.
Are we pro Samwell Tarly?
We love Samwell. He comes on the show sometimes. Yeah.
He's on the show sometimes. He sure is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, he is. He's,
we love Sam.
He's so cute. Oh, my goodness. And I love how he's looking out for Gilly. And how he came 33% of the way through saying, I love you today. And you could just mm-hmm. see it on his sad little face.
Which 33% did
just
say?
Just the word I. But you could tell. You could tell
repeating,
he was about
course,
to say the rest.
Nine.
You guys didn't see that? Oh, so obvious.
I'm sorry I missed
he's it. He's so in love with her.
I was a little distracted by the chicken plucking.
I was
very
too.
Nice
that
blocking.
Was a very distracting activity.
Yeah, she was getting into it though. It was great. Really, I thought the conversation, the whole exchange was sweet. I mean, what's happening as a general breakdown is that he's sort of looking over his shoulder. There's a lot of guys at the wall and she's there picking a chicken. And, you know, she's the wildling girl. So he's afraid that all of a sudden they're all going to sleep with her at the same time. So he needs to get her out of there quickly.
But do you think he put her in danger though, sending her away to Molestown?
I do. Yes.
Especially considering what just happened in this episode with the wildlings.
Yes. I think that his affection for Gilly and little Sam is overwhelming his common sense. I think that he has too many feelings for her, and he is irrationally afraid of the men on the wall being overly concerned with her body. And so he thinks that sending her to Molestown is the right thing. And I think it's just his jealousy and a little bit of pettiness. But overall, he has good intentions. I do not think it was a wise choice, however.
Any place that's within walking distance of Castle Black is really not safer than Castle Black.
Yep.
From wildlings, from Men of the Night's Watch who may have children in Molestown. You know, it's really not that big of a difference. So all he's doing is removing her from his immediate protection circle, like his ability to respond if she's attacked. And, you know, her accusation stings a little bit where he says, this is what's right. And she says, this is what's right for you. You know, I don't think she really believes that. And he certainly doesn't feel that way. But sending her away is kind of awkward because she isn't much safer in Molestown.
She has nobody to protect her. I mean, at least at Castle Black, for as not threatening as Sam is, he still has allies there. He has John, his biggest ally, who I'm sure would protect her if the situation arose. But we even see in, you know, the scenes towards the end of the episode, they're preparing to, you know, fortify Castle Black and the wall and make sure that they're in a position to be protected. Everything outside of that is vulnerable. And that doesn't, I mean, what happens then should Molestown come under attack by the wildlings, assuming that's the direction they're moving in? It puts Gilly in danger. It puts baby Sam in danger, and it's going to make Sam want to have to go out there and try and save her. Dumb decision, Sam.
Yeah.
Agreed.
She's not happy about the decision either.
One of the scenes I really loved in this episode, I always like these scenes, are the ones between Shireen and Davos.
Oh my gosh. So good.
She gets on his case about his reading skills again. And seeing as how she was his teacher, I think she's allowed. So point to Shireen.
What was his line about smugglers versus pirates? It was something like... If you're a famous smuggler, you're doing your job badly or something.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
He's very much a father figure for her. Because clearly Stannis is not. Even though he notes certain qualities about her that he sees in Stannis.
Stannis' first line, though, to Davos, you're a literary man now. What do you think of that? he's reading and he knows that Shireen is giving him reading lessons, and that's fine. You know. It's all working out. He knows Joff is dead. And this is where Stannis gets to definitively state. He's like, see the leeches, Davos?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I told you the leeches worked.
Told you, man.
Yeah, but I liked his line about how basically prophecies don't win wars. You know, people do.
Yep.
And he got into that whole really just Davos standing his ground, which I think is often not overlooked, but, you know, Stannis is a very rough character to try and get your head around. You know, you want to like Stannis, but there's just something about him that makes you not want to get behind him and his cause. And it's not Melisandre. I think it's just his personality. And
yeah, the only thing the only thing that's like tolerable about Stannis is that Davos loves him. Like that's kind of your into liking Stannis is liking Davos and respecting that Davos likes Stannis a lot.
Well, I see Stannis as the true king if we're going in the lineage of what happened to Robert. Mm-hmm. And I see Stannis as someone who's so decisive and thinks so well, because immediately after he read that Joffrey was killed and he bragged about the leeches, he was like, I'm so pissed we don't have enough soldiers to go take over King's Landing right now, because this would be a great time. And he's so right, but it's good that his head is so wired into the game.
Yeah.
And then Davos points out that a couple of families that he's been able to rally to the cause, and he gives the line that they don't have enough men between them to raid a pantry.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very likable. I mean, come on. That's funny as hell.
Stannis is funny. I think one of the reasons it's hard to rally as a fan behind Stannis as the true king is because I don't think he would be a very good king. I think he's too hard of a man. He has his most faithful subject of his little handful of subjects, his most faithful one, and he still cut off his fingers, you know, like right. That's a just king. He's the embodiment of pure justice, but kind of like Tywin was saying at the beginning of this episode, a just king does not necessarily make a good king.
Ooh, wisdom is necessary.
So, apart from wisdom. Being short on soldiers, they're short on gold. And I don't know why not every character in this whole show is talking about the Iron Bank of Braavos, but I think it comes to Davos eventually.
Hey, you know what? Braavos rhymes with Davos.
What?
It does.
Davos and Braavos.
Braavos, Micah. Braavos. My brain.
I like how you thought about the Iron Bank. He's like, oh. And then he's like, dear Iron Bank, please send gold.
She's like, are you writing as my dad? He's like, it's cool. Don't worry about it. I'm just hand. Dear Iron Bank, I am Stannis Baratheon, the one true king of everything. And I was wondering if the second sons were busy.
Please send $1 million. Tens and twenties, please. Thank you.
Please. Thank you. It's going to work, though. I think the Iron Bank just wants to see what happens. That's my guess. I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot of setup for it. And there was talk during the exchange between Arya and the Hound about the second sons and about Braavos. And I just think the story's widening up a little bit.
It is. And the Queen of Thorns brought up the Iron Bank in the last episode when she was talking to Tywin.
Mm-hmm.
They clearly are going to have a role to play this season. We've seen previews of Braavos and of certain people on ships. So we'll wait and see how that all kind of pans itself out. What role the bank plays?
Speaking of across the narrow sea, good Daenerys action.
Oh, yeah.
Today
there was catapulting. There was urinating.
Oh man, two urinatings.
Yeah.
Can I say something here? And you know, hopefully this isn't taken the wrong way. I'm interested for your feedback on this though. I don't feel like in this show a lot of times they do Dany justice. They a lot of times bring her in at the end of the episode when she hasn't been kind of developed throughout the course of it. And I feel like a lot of the scenes are always the same. You know, it's always those liberating shots of her, whether it's, you know, in Astapor, whether it's in Yunkai, now it's in Meereen. They all kind of have the same feel to them. And I don't know. The end of this episode just didn't work for me. There, I said it.
It does seem like they bring her in. They're like, okay, we need an epic finish. We did a lot of character development. We can definitely throw in a Daenerys liberation scene here, and it's going to end on this crazy cool note, and everybody's going to be like, whoa, oh my God. And it does seem like
I loved
this ending. I thought that her catapulting the slave collars was a genius, very nice touch. But I do think I agree with you. I remember the books, this part of the series, a little bit nebulously, but as I recall, book four is a pretty slow book for Daenerys. And so I think that they're showing her coolest stuff That's my guess.
Also, you know, she's still traveling. Like, she can't afford the luxury of being in one place in a camp and having witty lines about, you know, what's going on in the world around her, because she's still traveling and on the road. You're unfortunately, like, we have been treated to these scenes where she's still heading somewhere. And I mean, she's right. All the way east, and eventually she has to head west. So I want to say that her scenes will maybe always be doomed to these sort of, there's somewhere else she has to go.
Yeah.
But I think once she reaches Marine, and just based on the previews that we've seen, a throne room is involved. Perhaps it's hers. I think maybe we'll be treated to some more sort of like Daenerys at court kind of episodes. Maybe a couple episodes where she's not necessarily, you know, always having to travel and liberate. Maybe after this war is over, she will have occupied enough of Slaver's Bay that, you know, maybe the tide will turn. Maybe she won't be so much of a vagrant or migrant, or, you know, you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I wish that we kind of would have seen her sequence at the docks of Qarth, because I feel like that's one of those exchanges you're talking about where it feels more like the rest of the characters are caught in this show, less of these dramatic establishing shots of cities.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that Marine looked a million times better than Qarth. It was so majestic, and I'm glad that they poured more money into it because it looked great. It felt like a film, and like the shots of the barrels flying into the city, we got to see more looks in depth of what was going on in Marine, the kind of sort of lush environment that it had. So I'm interested to see whether or not, I mean, I think we're probably going to go inside, I'm assuming, and I'd like to see what happens in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Where were her dragons? Were they just piecing out? I didn't see him.
I was wondering if her champion in her back going pocket, to be a dragon. Yeah.
The whole champion thing is another issue, and it caused a certain person to trend on Twitter tonight. I saw
Dario.
I'm not going to – well, Dario in the show, yes, but it wasn't her champion in the books.
Oh.
And so
– well, see, I'm curious about that because – and I don't necessarily want to know who it was. Of course I do, but I won't ask. I'm smart enough to not ask. But she rules out – she calls up all her dudes and rules each one of them out.
Mm-hmm.
Grey Worm's like, "Let me do it," and she's like, "No, nah, you're the head of the Unsullied. You can't go." And you know, it's Barristan's like, "I'm the best guy there is," and she's like, "Yeah, but you're my best guy, and you can't do that."
So true. Jorah's, I can't risk you.
And Jorah's like, "I've been by your side the longest," and she's like, "You're in the friend zone, and you're staying there."
No, dude, you're totally. She completely gave him, I think, the best compliment of his life.
She did. She was really sweet to him. She was my closest friend and advisor.
Yeah,
like, that's the most important thing to me in the world, besides my dragons. Yes. I love you.
Exactly.
No. But when it comes to the one guy who can actually fight for her affection, she lets Dario Naharis go and do it.
Because I think she cares less about whether he dies. She's like, I care desperately about all these people dying. They cannot die. Dario Naharis, I'll let him die if
he
needs
to. She's like, this is for that flower shit, man. Because
she says that, doesn't she? She says that. She's like, well, win or lose, we're going to have a good fight, basically. It's just like, yeah. She just doesn't care. She has no investment in it. So I think she actually chose pretty well.
I agree. And I think it's just done to strengthen this bond that's growing between the two of them. There's definitely some interest there.
Yeah.
He winks at her and she kind of smiles a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, he did win in a rather good fashion.
Oh,
like,
he was
she was hoping for something that looked cool. Like, I think she just wanted a victory, but what he really did was owned the entire city of Marine, all the officials.
Yeah.
Right. So do we not want to talk about that character? I mean, I don't foresee him being in the show anytime ever.
Yeah.
So it's not one of the characters that she turned down in this episode, right?
Yeah, we've already read it in the books. It's Strong Belwas.
Yeah, it's not a spoiler.
And the cool tie is just that he's originally from Marine. He grew up kind of in the fighting pits there, so the fact that he would be her champion to kind of, you know, show her strength against the city that she's trying to conquer is kind of symbolic in a way.
It's kind of like Anakin returning to free the slaves on Tatooine.
I like that though, and I really wish he was in the show because
I really enjoyed
Phil Lash. Really cool. Yeah, he was great.
I wonder what the choice was, why they made that decision to not feature him more prominently, because he was a great character.
Huh.
It would have made the Barristan situation so much more complicated, and it's like Dario worked here, and the introduction for Barristan worked. I mean, it all worked. We're in season 4. The last two episodes got insanely good numbers, so what they wanted to accomplish, they're accomplishing.
So I just hope you know, in saying what I said earlier about it just feels like she's thrown in. I just hope that they do develop her a little bit more over the course of the season and have give her a little bit more screen time than just, hey, it's the end of the episode. The last 5 minutes, time to go to Danny
but close it out. You know this from reading. There have got to be characters who just have less stuff in these books.
That's how she is in the books, guys. Remember when we were doing Clash? We were just like, holy, where is that? Where are those chapters?
There are five Danny chapters. And
where
like,
are my
and
chapters?
There are five Danny chapters and 14 Tyrion chapters in a book. Right. I mean, this is just something that you have to put up with based on the adaptation. And they're still pulling from book five. Already,
of course.
You know,
well, she's not in book four, so I mean, it's,
well, yeah.
It's,
but so I think it's they're going to have to do something very creative very shortly when it comes to like sort of running out of content from the series at all because she's in it so much less. But she's such a major, so somebody you have to keep in mind, you know, because she poses the biggest threat. And it was interesting to hear Tywin reference her in this episode.
Yeah, I thought that was important that. This whole episode, I thought Tywin really owned.
He did.
You know, he just flexed his muscle throughout the course of the entire episode. It shows how much of a tactician he is, how forward thinking he is. It doesn't matter to him that Joffrey's dead. He just sees it as now the opportunity for him to further his own agenda, have Tommen on the throne, and really start making the right alliances. He says as much when he's talking to Oberyn.
Yes.
And they need the Dornish because he thinks they'll be a great ally against Daenerys.
You know, I got to ask you guys, we didn't see Oberyn shake Tywin's hand because it cut away. Do we think he shook Tywin's hand?
Yes,
I think so.
Absolutely.
After this, he walked, you know, he had a small council upgrade and I'm going to be on the council of this trial upgrade
and
in one
a possible
meeting
with the Mountain.
He was just whoring around. He did not expect
this. Can we talk about that for a second? I mean, we completely ignored what he walked in on.
I mean, what luck? Close really, what luck shot. Does Oberyn Martell have?
I don't know if it's luck necessarily. I think it's royal blood and gold and being a very handsome man and you know all of these things.
There was a lot of nudity in this episode on both sides. I mean, even in Mole's Town, the waitresses, I guess, bartend much different than bars that I've been at.
Have you ever been to Hooters?
Well, but they're not hanging out.
I don't think they do that anymore.
Different places.
Either. Yeah, there's a lot of nudity. Yay, HBO. But I did think that orgy scene was an interesting addition. And I like that Oberyn is representing this sort of sexuality spanning character that is always referenced in the books, but they're showing it overtly, which is something that you don't see many television shows doing. And I think it's really cool.
I think that's one of the benefits of having HBO, you know, to adapt your book is because if this is in the book, but on any other channel, it wouldn't be shown. It wouldn't be doing justice in a way.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and I think we like Oberyn for his freedom, for his free acting, for how just he's just living life largely.
How he sees the world is very different than it's complete contrast to somebody like Tywin Lannister.
Looks like he's having more fun than Tywin too.
Yeah, I guess it depends on your perspective. Tywin sounds like he's having a blast now.
Right now he is having a blast. He's putting together like he's picking council people for a trial. Like he's like, yeah.
Oh yeah, this is Tywin's game. Tyrion said something at the end that I thought was really interesting because Tywin almost seemed as though throughout this episode he was very rational, he was down to earth, he was making good choices, which was very surprising, and it almost seemed conciliatory, like he was like, okay, well, my son's dead, so now I need to shore up my defenses, I need to prep a wiser king, we need to really get our act together as Lannisters. But then Tyrion said this line at the end in the cell when Pod, who might get my vote for best character in this entire episode, even better than Tywin. But when he was saying to Pod that Tywin never wastes a family tragedy or something like that. And I was like, that's perfect. That explains it all. Like he's got a family tragedy and he's going to capitalize on it. I thought that was very astute. Of course, Tyrion might know his father better than I do.
Haven't talked about Tyrion yet, guys. Can you believe this?
This was a very touching scene. I think it only made sense to bring it in at the quieter part of our episode.
Agreed.
It was touching. We got to see Pod and Tyrion interact. We got to see some food be smuggled in some questionable locations, but that's what it takes.
Where did all those pockets come from?
But he got to keep everything else.
Yeah, the duck sausage fit in there nicely. All good. Sorry.
Podrick. God, I almost cried a little bit. I'll be honest.
And we know Podrick doesn't have a lot of room. So
exactly.
It's like Pod, wherever you hid the duck sausage, bring the wine there next time.
So it was, yeah, you're right. It was really just a great scene to see somebody that's actually loyal.
Yes.
To another person in this series is not very common. So
right.
It was, and that's really it for Tyrion and Podrick. You know, he tells him to go away, you know, to get to safety before something terrible happens to him. And we know that Bronn is not in a good situation either. You know, they go through that list of people. You know, Sansa's gone. Varys has been called by Cersei as a witness. Jaime is, who knows? I mean, he wants Podrick to, kind of as his last act of duty, to go get his brother. But, you know, Bronn is a sellsword, and who knows what's going to end up happening to him.
I'm sure. I have a strong suspicion that Bronn is already in somebody else's pocket. There's no way. There's no way he'd be hanging out waiting for Tyrion's paycheck. He's going to find somebody else ASAP.
Oh, really? I hope there's shame. Like there's a Bronn rescue.
No honor that's my among theory. Thieves.
None.
Well, I think that raises the question, though, because he's the one who took Shay and supposedly escorted Shay off to safety.
Right.
So if you think that he would not, if you think he would betray Tyrion, you know, what do we think as far as her life? Is she alive? Did she get on a boat safely or is she dead?
And that was one of the first people he asked about, mm-hmm. Shay, showing where he's thinking in this scene.
We'll find out. There's more episodes to be watched. But I think it's only appropriate that we close out this episode, or at least our discussion, talking about Arya and the Hound, because they're the two that we did not get to yet. And,
best for last.
You know, I was starting to really think the Hound had turned over a little bit of a lighter side. And,
no, man.
Well, he didn't kill the guy.
Yeah, just hey, that's true. He didn't kill him. But just hanging out with a little girl does not make for a redemption of a character. I think that's they've shown him softening up, and the audience is like, oh, the Hound is so cuddly, but he's not. You know, he's a dick, and he has no sympathy for anybody that he meets. And I think that this episode showed that really well. His character shining through.
Have we learned nothing from Walder Frey? You can't come into people's homes and do this.
No, you cannot.
And he still did. And they were talking about Freys at dinner.
He was a butthole at that dinner. Can I just say? The Hound is
they
a
both got the biggest helping of soup, first off.
Seriously.
Glug, glug, glug. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And this
yeah,
is where we get to hear about the Red Wedding. He's like, the Red Wedding, they're calling it. And you know, that's, yeah, obviously they talk about the phrase and guest rights, but I just think, isn't that our first, like, official mention of the Red Wedding being said in an episode?
And,
like, guest rights being stated forthwith, like, you're not supposed to do this.
That is ominous because, you know, at the end of the episode, you know, they're sleeping in the barn, she wakes up a little late, and there's a hilt to the top of this guy's head, and they're taking all the gold that he had.
You know, and it's like, what can Arya do, really, against him? You know, she can't really make him give the silver back because she's still smaller than he is. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe she'll get a cut. That you know, he takes advantage, but I just think, what if the guy didn't really have allegiance to the Tullys, and he said, "Oh, you have allegiance to the Tullys? I'm sworn to the Freys, or I'm sworn to the Lannister." You know,
how would we feel differently?
He would have been gone.
I think that's a good question, and I mean, furthermore, look at the Hound's way of justifying it. They are weak. They will be dead by winter. So he's like, I didn't kill them, sure, but I mean, I robbed them, but they're going to be dead anyway. Come.
They definitely will, because they don't have any money.
Yeah.
It's rough.
You brought up a point earlier about the Hound being a character that you feel as though, you know, he's done terrible things. He's raped and pillaged. He's murdered. But you can almost forgive him for those things. And I feel like I am not able to do that with the Hound. I don't know why it is. And I mean, obviously it's a terrible thing to rape and murder and pillage. And that's something that I don't think that being nice to a little girl will necessarily make up for. But mm-hmm. I kind of, when I feel that way, this is maybe a little dorky, but I always feel like Stannis. I'm like, well, I can commend him for keeping Arya alive and trying to return her to her home, but I also think that he should die for all of the terrible things that he's done. And so I'm not able to like him, even though he can be very likable. I'm still like, you're an asshole. You know, like you've done these horrible things. And I don't know how I'm supposed to feel about the Hound, I suppose. Maybe that's true of most characters in this show.
I think so. Yeah.
I think that's the great part of a lot of these characters is sometimes you hate them and sometimes you actually feel sympathetic and grow to like them. And I think, you know, it's the same thing with Tywin, right? From season two with Arya. I think it's just Arya. Just she works her magic on these villainous characters and you actually start to like them a little bit. But I think, you know, the Hound, what's his name? Rory McCann. He just does such a great job playing him. You know, he's funny too. I think that's part of it. And I don't know that he's that funny in the books. I mean, he's much more of a
drunk,
brash type of character. Right. And here on the show, he's like, you know, you can laugh and you can enjoy it. And he's fighting with Arya for Arya for his own selfish reasons, but he is. And, you know, that's why you're somewhat drawn to him, I think.
Yeah.
But speaking of Arya, I have to give her my own.
Are we there? We've made it.
I think we're there.
We've made it to the owns of this episode.
And if we left anything out,
stretch.
Yeah, if we left anything out, we can talk about it on Friday's episode. But yeah, her line, you know, when the Hound is walking away with all that silver in hand, she says, "You're the worst shit in the Seven Kingdoms." but then he turns around and schools her. Yeah, I forget what the exact line was, but he basically tells her, "Oh, I'm the worst shit. They're the ones worse than me. You know, think of all the Starks that have been beheaded." And she kind of shuts up.
Yeah, he says, "How many more Starks do they have to behead before you figure it out?" or something.
Yeah,
she's like,
there you
"Ooh,
go.
Burn." Yeah. It's kind
you
of
got
sick
me
burn.
There. I give my own to the Hound. Thanks, Hound.
Zach, where will you lay your own?
What do I have to do next? Why don't you do it next? I mean, you've already got yours, I'm sure. You do yours.
Yeah, I've got mine already.
You're excited.
No, it was a good episode. I enjoyed it. I have to give my own to Dario Naharis for doing something that not many people in Dany's company could do. The Marine soldier, champion, whoever you want to call him, drew a line in the sand, and Dario drew it right back. So good for him.
With his blood.
For excellent takedown of that horse.
Oh, gosh.
And overall, just looking out for Dany's honor, and he really made her words count.
I have to say, if I was a horse, I would not want to be cast on this show.
Hell no.
You have to go anywhere you want, though.
You could see Marine, Micah.
That's true.
King's Landing. You could see Storm's End.
Majestic animal.
They're fed very well.
River Run.
All right. I will set up our guest to give her first own ever of all time on Game of Owns.
This is really exciting. I'm nervous. I think my own has to go to little Podrick Payne for being so unflappably loyal, for being the best squire that's ever been, and for smuggling that duck sausage in his unmentionable places.
I will give my own. I'm looking at two and I can't decide because I think that they're both majestic in their own rights, but I'm going to possibly give it to the Hound when he says, "Are you going to do all seven of the fuckers?" at the dinner. He said it a little different than that, but he said it and it was funny. And he finished the end of it really quickly. I thought that was excellent with the stranger.
Yeah.
And also the story that Tywin was giving Tommen. Now you could say the story in itself, that whole thing in front of Joffrey and Cersei was just a huge own because Tywin was very dominating in this episode. But I think that King Robert gets the own. We learn a little bit more about King Robert and about his day to day as a king. And it says he attended 3 small council meetings in 17 years. So yes. I just wanted to give the own to King Robert for skirting off duty for, I mean, 3 and 7. That's not like I went to 3 this month. I totally got away with it. 3 and 17 years.
That's how he has all those bastards.
I'm just going to clap for Robert right now.
I think you should give the own to his council for not coming and killing him sooner. They showed tremendous restraint.
He had a great time being king.
Day 4. The king is not here.
He's still asleep. He's been hungover for 4 days.
Day 437. The king is still not here.
So those were our owns, ladies and gentlemen. You know how this works. It is a show that we make. You're listening. It being Game of Owns, we like to talk about things like what just happened. We just watched the third episode of Game of Thrones. It's in season 4 and it's all very exciting. You have sent us probably 7,000 owns via Twitter tonight, and we're going to get to a few of those right now.
And now it's Eric Skull reads the tweets in however long it takes or less.
Go!
Manuel Paredes says, my own goes to Jamie for turning morning time into sexy time.
Oh, no. Ooh,
yikes. Oh, no.
Morning as in M-O-U-R-N.
M-O-U-R-N. And I just thought of a crazy phrase, morning wood.
Oof. Oh, God.
Oof, guys. Too soon.
Too soon. Horrible. Too soon. All right. Yeah. Moving on with the owns. Christina Bailey, you'll not be a very good hand if you pronounce night Kernigget. Sassy, hashtag sassy in her cell. So that one is for Shireen.
Oh, Shireen. Sassy, yeah, she gets a home for that one. Yeah.
Next, we have Nathan Larson. Own goes to Davos. Quote, your father lacks an appreciation for the finer points of bad behavior.
That was an amazing line. Yes.
Michael Ash, own to Littlefinger for really pulling the strings behind the purple wedding. He also knows how to keep a man's silence. Yes, that he does. Moment of silence for Sir Dantos, everybody. Sir Dantos.
Of course, Sir Dantos.
Christopher Adams says, my own goes to Tywin and his way of motivation for future kings.
Tywin kind of owned the whole episode, start to finish.
Andrew Erb says, own of the episode has to go to Daario for his pinpoint accuracy under pressure.
I would agree.
Right in the horse's mouth.
Perfect shot.
That guy is not, he's not pee shy. I'll give him that.
He started going immediately.
Yeah, he was holding it.
There was he had to go. He was waiting for that moment.
He did.
Perfect.
Kevin Bloomfield says, own goes to Peter Baelish for his voice dropping even lower and becoming even more growly.
Yeah. God, it's so creepy.
Sansa, you're so close to me.
Scott Glennon says, the own goes to Tyrion, a better squire there never was, he said to Pod. I don't know if that's the exact line. The whole scene was great, though. Lady Ash says, Davos to Sansa is my own. Quote, you're stronger than you know. Yeah, I agree. That was a good line for Sansa to hear just then.
Oh, Baelish.
Of course, Mike Scannoni says, own to Oberyn Martell for everything he has done and everything he will do.
Shaking my fist at you.
Our friend Peggy Ruiz says, I won't be able to watch it until my kids are in bed. My owns won't happen until later.
We look forward to your owns, Peggy.
Frowny face. Peggy, we'll catch you on the Friday show for sure. Joe Schaefer says, a double own for Daario Naharis for owning the horse and the guy on it. I agree. That is kind of a double own. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. Caroline J, the hound's snot rocket. All other snot rockets.
How could I forget that? The director was like, keep it!
And let's finish this right now on Bia Nerd. Bia Nerd, B-I-A, says, my own goes to the Lannister family for proving again to be the most dysfunctional family in all the Seven Kingdoms.
That's for sure.
Eric Skull read the tweets. In however long it took him, or less.
We listened to him. Eric, thank you for doing that.
But you know, in addition to Twitter, we did get some owns on Facebook, and I feel like we need to give the wall here some love.
Let's give the love to the wall.
If only for a few here.
All right, let's
Karen
love on
Chavez,
this wall.
She says, Littlefinger owns Sansa, literally. And a frowny emoticon. Yep. Amanda Vivian Howard says, I'm going to add an additional own that my sister reminded me of. Own goes to old Nan and the old stories when Oberyn said, some people say the sky is blue because we live in the eye of a blue-eyed giant. Mm-hmm. Rob and Bran mentioned the same tale old Nan told them back in season one.
It sounded familiar.
Nice. Old Nan.
Oh, man.
Miss you, babe.
Amanda Porter, Stannis had a pretty great own with the quote, they don't have enough men between them to raid a pantry.
That just makes me
Anthony
hungry.
Runyon. Tywin got the own over Joffrey, saying how bad he was right next to his corpse in front of Cersei.
Still owning Joffrey.
And Brittany Wilcox, Tywin gets my own for mentioning the dragons. Finally, someone in Westeros is talking Daenerys, Drogon, Rhaegal, and Viserion. Seriously, Jaime's golden hand gets an honorable own for creeping out Cersei. She's fine until it comes near her.
It's pretty creepy.
Oh, man. She's the one that picked out the filigree, too.
Yeah. Rachel Jenkins, Dario, own Marines champion without even breaking a sweat. Samantha Jones says Danny owns for being the breaker of chains.
And barrels, too.
Yes. Yeah. 8 barrels were broken.
Jennifer Christian. Arya gets my own for probably being the only person in the Seven Kingdoms that could get away with basically calling the Hound demented. She was quick on her thinking and got them out of an awkward moment. I'm loving this little side adventures of the Stark and the Hound.
Me too.
Yeah.
Amanda Vivian Howard, she had one earlier, but this was her first one. Podrick Payne owned my heart. Loved Pod in the books, but show Pod tugs at my heartstrings.
He's the best.
Miss you, Pod. I hope you come back soon, buddy.
Don't go away. The loyalist liar.
I hope Tyrion's wrong. Really, I hope you betray him and become a knight. No. Please.
He's so cute.
We're going to talk about this on Friday. I found it to be a little dramatic, melodramatic. It's like, oh, this is farewell. But right. There was never a loyal squaw. So, in the history of squaws, there was never a more.
All right. But I think the reason that works, we can talk about it on Friday, but the reason that works is because Tyrion saying it to Podrick probably made that kid's whole life. I mean, come on. That's amazing. To hear from a Lannister, that's baller.
I guess coming from Tyrion, baller. You're right. I want Tyrion to say that about me.
Yeah, exactly. We all do. That's why it's so great, Eric.
Okay. Thank you for being here. I'm just Tyrion being like, dude, you're like the loyalist. Yeah.
Guy, there is.
Well, I'm beside myself, but not so beside myself that I cannot reiterate which media outlets you can find us at, or social media outlets, I should say. Are you guys ready?
I'm waiting.
So ready.
Patiently.
Born ready.
Okay. Well, on Facebook, which Micah just read from our wall, we invite you to scroll upon our wall by visiting facebook.com/gameofowns.
Use a Sharpie.
Don't use a Sharpie. You can't erase it.
Oh, don't. Yes. Terrible. Washable markers only.
Yes. Thank you.
I guess. Or whiteboard dry markers. Erase. Dry erase.
Expo.
That's
use
sort
Expo
of thing.
Only.
Yes. Or chalk.
Sponsored by Expo.
What else, Eric? Twitter at Game of Owns.
Yes. Twitter is at Game of Owns. Tweet us. First follow us and then tweet us.
Both.
And send us your owns. You can continue to submit owns for this episode. If you had to put some kids to bed the first time around and are just getting around to it later, feel free to send it to us and we'll read some more on our Friday scheduled episode. Also, we have email. Yes. Email, that thing that came with the dawn of the internet, and people still haven't got rid of it yet. You can email us, contact@gameofowns.com, with your longer format theories, questions, suggestions, comments, and owns as well.
Don't forget to visit winnerscoming.net. It's a website that you're probably on right now, listening to our podcast with/and/or. It's a place where people read news, and we hope you read the news along with us as the week progresses. Also, Micah has something to say.
Yes, the other way you may be listening to us is through iTunes. And while you're over there, we do ask that if you haven't done so already, you leave us a rate and review, and we will read some of those on Friday's episode.
Kate, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
So much fun.
Thanks for inviting me, you guys. This was wonderful.
I hope you enjoyed my HBO Go login.
I did. I enjoyed it immensely. You know, I felt a little guilty about it, but then I Googled it, which I always do when I feel guilty. This is a real thing. If I feel guilty about something, I'll Google it and see if other people also
should
feel
guilty
about it.
Should I be guilty for this?
No. Yet, should I feel guilty about HBO? And apparently the president of HBO has said that he's like super into the fact that people share their HBO Go logins because it's good marketing. So I don't feel bad anymore. And nobody out there should feel bad either.
Did you guys hear that? Good marketing. So share the show with your friends. Tell them. Right. Say, hey, it's beautifully fun.
But be careful, because if your piracy becomes famous, or wait, the smuggling, if you're famous.
That's right.
The,
oh, that's you right. Know, you know, Davos
that
stuff.
That thing that Davos said. Yes. Well, be careful with your piracy. Because if you're secretly a smuggler, you don't want to be well known.
That's right.
So remember, we will return on Friday speaking even more deeply about your own concerns and also the things that we want to talk about even further from this episode. Shall we say goodbye, everybody?
Goodbye.
I'm Eric Skull.
And that's it.
Good. The ball's in your court.
I'm Zach. That's Micah. That's Kate. This is More Music.
Check, 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 check.
Waveforms.
Waves.
Oh, Zach, yeah. You're going to love what I did with one of the 8x10s that now hangs on my bedroom wall.
What'd you do?
I'll tell you about it later.
Okay.
I have the, well, I'll tell you now. I have the menu from Café des Artistes from the TNG episode We'll Always Have Paris.
Oh, no. My God.
No way.